Kubiak versus AstraZeneca LP, Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Richard Martin. I represent the plaintiff below and appellant before this Court in this matter. There are two issues that we addressed in the briefs and that I intend to address before the Court here today. The first issue that was addressed was whether or not the trial court erred in granting summary judgment without considering the supplemental affidavit that was submitted by on behalf of Dr. Marks. The second issue, which we intend to show, is that the trial court further erred in finding that the warnings that were provided by the defendant below AstraZeneca were adequate as a matter of law. Now, in order to properly look at this case, I think we need to first look at the trial court's ruling itself and the basis for the ruling there. In addressing question number one here, whether or not the court properly refused to consider the supplemental affidavit of Dr. Marks, I quote the court's opinion, I believe on page 9, the court stated, quote, the order was dated June 5, 2002, thus the supplemental affidavit was due July 5, 2002. The trial court went on to say in a footnote there that even were the court to tack on 3 days under Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, the supplemental affidavit was still filed 1 day too late. So the court below on that issue is indicating to us here that they believe that possibly 6E does apply, but the court's ruling in that case was, or the court's ruling below, is based on the premise that an order is effective on the date it is signed rather than on the date it is filed. So the question before this court is that the case, or is an order effective on the date that it is filed and entered with the clerk's office rather than on the date in which it is signed by the court?
The court says, court orders plaintiffs to submit a supplemental, et cetera, within 30 days of the date, and it says no extension of the time will be granted. Why isn't it simple prudence to submit it within 30 days rather than...
Well, I think, Judge, the issue is when does the clock start on the 30 days? Does the clock start on June 5th?
What do you do what the judge says? There's 30 days. He says 30 days from the date of this order. There isn't any ambiguity about that.
I think the ambiguity is what is the date of the order. The order is signed on June 5th, but the order is entered by the clerk on June 7th.
Well, there's 30 days from the date of this order, and then the next line is so ordered this 5th day of June. Sensible to comply rather than try to get a couple of more days.
Is there some problem getting this affidavit?
If Your Honors would look, I believe the affidavit was some 15 to 20 pages long. I don't recall the exact length of it. Essentially, what happened here, the order is dated June 5. The order was entered by the clerk on June 7 and then mailed to the plaintiff's counsel. So we're looking at approximately 5 days of 30 days to prepare a substantial reply, being gone before the plaintiff even knows anything needs to be done. So in that sense, it's somewhat,
okay,
I guess, inequitable.
Extension of time.
I believe the court clearly indicated no extensions of time would have been granted at that point.
I read that part.
And I believe the defendant below, or the appellee here, has not cited any, and we did cite Rule 58 for the proposition that the proper date of the order is the date that it was entered, not the date that it was filed. The appellee has not cited any authority contrary to that opinion, but has cited...
Getting beyond that, what I don't understand is the warning label seems to be completely consistent with what is known about this drug, so I don't know what the problem is.
Well, I think getting to that, and that being the second issue, the judge's opinion there appears to state merely that a warning was given.
We know what the warning is. We know what the medical literature says, and they seem to be the same.
Well, I think the medical literature, and if you all would...
What's insufficient about the warning?
The warning, and I believe the Dr. Marks indicated that he believed it was insufficient in that, with respect to glaucoma and cataract, the warning should have carried cautionary notes regarding follow-up treatments and follow-up, I guess, monitoring for development of cataract or glaucoma.
But if a physician knows that certain adverse consequences are associated with the use of a drug, that physician understands there can be a causal relationship between the two and that a patient should be monitored for signs of those.
But I think I think clearly, yes, the doctor does have some responsibility there, but the drug company also has a responsibility to provide not only to provide warnings to the doctors, but to provide adequate warnings. And there is a case, and I don't recall the citation that was cited by the appellee, that where the doctor has independent knowledge of the risks inherent with a drug, then that may be grounds to find that the warnings are adequate as a matter of law. The record before you in this case does not indicate that Dr. Amadio's knowledge was in any way independent of the information provided by AstraZeneca in this case. All it indicates is that Dr. Amadio was aware that glaucoma and cataracts were potential side effects. He was also, and he was made aware of this, from the product literature provided to him by AstraZeneca.
Well, I don't know why there should be any...
Why does it matter?
I'm sorry.
I mean, either way, Mrs. Zoliuk would lose, whether Dr. Amadio's knowledge of the risks was independent of the information supplied to him by Astra or not, because if the knowledge results from Astra's warnings, that demonstrates that the warnings were adequate. If the knowledge comes from an independent source, then the learned intermediary doctrine would apply, and either way, she would lose.
Well, I don't think just because warnings were given that demonstrates that the warnings were adequate. We've got to look at a number of factors here.
I think they just have to look at the warning. Rare instances of glaucoma, increased intraocular pressure, and cataracts have been reported following the administration of corticosteroids. What is insufficient about that warning? I just don't get it.
It was the opinion of Dr. Marks that the warning should have gone on to indicate that monitoring is necessary for development of the problem.
Can you imagine what an insert in a drug would say if your position was accepted? You don't merely have to list the side effects, you have to list the treatment.
I understand that, Your Honor. The issue here, though, and the appellee had cited, I think, several cases from Maryland, from Oklahoma, and from Tennessee in support of essentially the proposition that giving a warning is adequate, or just the mere giving of a warning is adequate to meet the test. And those three cases...
The warning has to be truthful and accurate, but you want a warning plus a treatment protocol.
I think the warning...
These inserts 100 pages long.
I think the issue is whether the warning factually gives enough information to the doctor there, and is there a factual...
No, what you want the warning, there are these side effects, and you also want a treatment or monitoring system, or what do you do to watch for those side effects? And that just multiplies that. Next you want to have, what do you do if you discover you have cataracts?
Your Honor, I don't believe that would be necessary in every case, but in some cases,
rare instances of cataract, person should be monitored. If she gets cataracts, she should go to a reputable surgeon and have a laser removal. If she has glaucoma, she should take the following medicines under a doctor's physician. It just goes on and on and on.
Well, I think the point clearly there is it's a fact issue that it's not an issue of law.
Well, I know, but you're going to have juries design inserts for drug companies?
I don't know. I wouldn't suggest that the jury design the package insert, but I think it's an issue for the jury.
Well, it's the same thing. Right, issue for the jury. Here's a 100-page insert, jury, but they didn't say this, they didn't say that, they didn't say the other thing, so it's for you to decide whether this is adequate. Maybe it should have been 150 pages long. That's your position.
My position is it's a question of fact, clearly to be decided by the jury. That is my position, and Judge, based on that position and on the other issue, we would ask that this court respectfully reverse the decision of the district court and remand this case to them with instructions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. Whaley?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Alan Whaley. I represent the defendants appellees AstraZeneca LP and AstraZeneca AB. As has already been noted, there are two grounds for the district court's decision, two grounds to affirm it. The timeliness issue, whether the district court's decision to disregard the supplemental affidavit that was tendered after the deadline by Ms. Ziliak's attorney was erroneous under an abuse of discretion standard. And the second is if you even go ahead and consider the sufficiency of the affidavit. And
why did the judge throw out the case just because it missed its deadline by a few days with a possible ambiguity?
I think he could have done it on that ground, Your Honor. I think he wanted to also provide an alternative.
No, that's not my question. Why did he fasten on this timeliness thing? It seems so trivial.
Well, with due respect, Your Honor, I don't really think it is trivial. This is not, I don't think, a situation where the district court is being unreasonable or draconian. It had given extra time to Ms. Ziliak.
What was the rush? I don't understand.
Well, I think the answer to that, Your Honor, is that the rules are full of deadlines that were...
I didn't say anything. I know, but this is not a rule deadline, right? This is just a judge saying, I'd like this in 30 days. You could have said 60 days. You could have said 90 days.
He could have.
Rule, right?
Yes, he could have said that. But I guess I don't...
What was the big hurry? He doesn't say that, you know, I'm going to throw out this case because this five-day delay or whatever it was caused hardship to the defendant.
No, I don't think that the five-day delay could be said to cause hardship to the defendant.
So what's the point?
I think the point is he had issued an order after having given extra time to supplement evidence in opposition to a motion for summary judgment, and he wanted to make sure that
so
it was done in a
fine way.
Why
not fine him? Because we do talk about proportionality in sanctions, and to throw out a person's case for a harmless mistake that doesn't... harmless, and although the mistake, I agree with you, was erroneous on his part, but you know, you can understand vaguely what confused him about this, that there is this, you know, entry versus order stuff. So I would think if the judge wanted to, and the fact the judge offered the alternative ground suggests he really was not comfortable with the timeliness ground. It just seems a very trivial basis for...
Well, I don't know that I would agree that it was...
It's one thing he said, well, I'm too busy to read this supplemental affidavit, so I'm just throwing this out as untimely. But if he goes ahead and reads it and offers his analysis of it as an alternative ground, why try to insulate his decision from appeal by throwing in timeliness as a ground?
Well, I don't interpret his reasoning in that way, Your Honor. I think he...
Well, there isn't any reasoning process explained with regard to why he thought throwing the case out was an appropriate sanction for this.
Well, I do think he explains. I did think he explained his rationale, and maybe that's why...
I understand his interpretation, but I don't understand why he thought this was a proper sanction.
Strictly on timeliness?
Right.
Well, I guess my only supposition on that could...
That's your supposition. I didn't say anything.
I agree that he didn't explain, this is why I think, solely on timeliness grounds, that this is the proper sanction.
Precisely.
I think that's true. But I think he also justifies the decision amply by going on to address...
Well, obviously, but you were starting off by defending this first ground, the timeliness.
I do think it's reasonable.
Esoteric information about how the time orders.
And I do think that was a reasonable interpretation on his part and a reasonable deadline. But
a reasonable interpretation and a reasonable deadline, but that doesn't mean it was reasonable to throw the case out because the deadline was missed by a few days. Unless this is a scofflaw lawyer or some urgency in disposing of the case.
No, I don't think the judge thought that. I don't think we're contending that, Your Honor. I do think that the sanction of dismissing the case or granting the motion for summary judgment is justified by the substantive analysis that
all of our cases talk about warnings and a progression of punishment, don't they?
Yes, I think maybe that's the point that Judge Posner was raising.
Well,
I don't think the progression applies when you're talking about whether an adequate amount of evidence has been brought forth to create a question of genuine issue.
She's talking about the timeliness issue.
Timeliness.
Not the warning on the label, the warning to the lawyer.
And I agree that there isn't a scalability analysis built into the judge's decision on the timeliness issue. I agree with that. I think he's amply justified by moving to the merits and saying, and he could have left the timeliness issue out, I suppose. But I think he's also amply justified by moving to the merits and analyzing the adequacy of the warning and determining that even if you ignore the timeliness issue, the supplemental affidavit didn't create a genuine issue of material fact about the adequacy of the warning. The judge was very careful to analyze that supplemental affidavit in detail, quoting specific references that it made and the studies that Dr. Marks cited, and comparing those and even Dr. Marks' own language to how the warning itself was phrased. And those kinds of phrases
were very... What you should have said to the judge was, well, don't throw his case out on the basis of the merits, but then make him pay you $1,000 for having missed the deadline, right?
I'm sorry.
Then you'd be better off by $1,000.
And if he had done both?
Right.
I would accept that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I do think, in terms of the sanctions, there's no doubt that district judges all the time make evaluations as to whether the evidence offered in opposition to a motion for summary judgment meets the standard, and that's what was done by the district court judge in this case. He found quite reasonably that the language of the warning matched very precisely not just the studies Dr. Marks relied on, but Dr. Marks' own opinion as expressed in the affidavit, and thought that there was enough of a confluence there that there wasn't really a genuine issue as to whether the warning was adequate.
Do we know what the actual incidence of these ocular complications are of the people who use the cortisone spray?
This is guesswork on my part, Your Honor. I'm not sure that the package insert cited a percentage, but the number that's in my mind is they characterized it as rare because it was less than 1%, but I'm not positive of that. But an extremely rare occurrence was dealt with by the warning, and as a final bit of evidence about the adequacy of the warning, as you pointed out, Judge Robner, Dr. Amodio, the prescribing physician, testified unequivocally that he was aware, took that into account, prescribed the medication anyway. So that is an additional ground, basically on the basis of a causation analysis, that there couldn't have been anything different about that warning that would have caused Dr. Amodio to act differently. He knew the risk that Ms. Ziliak complains of and the one that she said was inadequately warned about by AstraZeneca. For these reasons, we think the district court's decision entering summary judgment was completely appropriate. We ask that it be affirmed.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Whaley. And Mr. Martin, how much time do you have? 1 minute?
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to address that last issue first. As far as Dr. Amodio having sufficient knowledge, the question I would raise then is if Dr. Amodio had sufficient knowledge of that, why did he thereafter, these allegations were made, inquire of AstraZeneca regarding the side effects of this, and there was a letter, I believe, that was submitted to him afterwards, and that letter specifically indicated that monitoring progress should be done.
Well, then you should bring a malpractice suit against the doctor.
Well, I think that letter that was sent to him is clear indication that he did not have sufficient information from the drug company in order to...
Every communication between a drug company and a doctor has to be printed on the insert.
I'm not saying that it has to be printed on the insert, no, but I'm just saying that is evidence that Dr. Amodio didn't have all the information that he needed to consider prior to prescribing this medication.
Well, but the inserts aren't supposed to be the doctor's medical education.
Well, I would agree with that, Judge, but they do have to point out the dangers attendant with that particular medication.
They did. a danger, this, you know, glaucoma and so on. And if he doesn't know what glaucoma is, then he has to ask someone.
And as a final note, I would point out, Judge, that I do believe that the trial court did ignore the original affidavit of Dr. Marks that was filed. The court did not indicate that Dr. Marks in any way was not qualified to render the opinions. The opinions rendered by Dr. Marks in the original affidavit indicated that he would not categorize or characterize the risks as just rare, and that he believed stronger warnings were necessary. Because of that, because the court did not attack his credibility as an expert, there is an issue of fact raised by his affidavit that requires that this case be remanded.
Thank you very much to both counsel, and you take an advisement, and the court will stand in recess.
Yeah, I didn't either.